Okay, before I begin, I'd like to announce a Nader teach-in happening right here at Columbia on October 18th. And the confirmed speakers are Manning Marable, professor of history here at Columbia, Kathy Kelly, Nobel Prize nominee, leading activist against the sanctions on Iraq, Amy Goodman, host of Pacifica Radio, Democracy Now!, Ahmed Shaki, editor, International Socialist Review, Julia Willebrand, chair of West Side Green Party, and Susan Sarandon. And maybe we can get Winona LaDuke. We'll work on that. And this Wednesday, October 11th, the Nader campaign in New York City will be protesting outside the Democratic Party headquarters, and we will be chanting, "Let Nader in the debates." So please join us. There are flyers outside. I'm proud to be here tonight, this Friday evening, because no matter how many cops escort Ralph Nader out of the next presidential debates, as November approaches, we stand on the threshold of a historic moment in American history. This is the first time in more than 80 years that a presidential candidate running independently from the traditional two-party system in the United States has electrified thousands of people in one amphitheater after another across the nation with the message that, as Nader says, "We've got to go out and create a political movement where the people write the rules, not the corporations." This is the first time in almost a century that Americans have the opportunity to cast a vote for a candidate who has the courage to raise the questions that concern millions of ordinary people, not just in word, but in deed. The last time this historic opportunity presented itself in earnest was in 1912, when Socialist Party candidate Eugene Debs got 6% of the vote. And he got 6% of the vote by challenging Americans with these words: "I would rather vote for someone I want and not have him win than vote for someone I don't want and have him win." After 30 years of brutal economic attacks by corporations that have left 46 million Americans without health care, 38 million Americans living in abject poverty in the richest society humanity has ever seen, in the midst of the longest economic boom this society has seen yet, and a situation in which Americans are working a full month more today than in 1973 for the same yearly wages. And after witnessing the rise of a deadly justice system in this country, which has brought us the highest rates of execution in American history, finally, Nader's candidacy allows millions of Americans to say, "Enough is enough. Enough of this barbarity." And I'm the bearer of good news this evening. We have just heard that support for Ralph Nader is up 2 percentage points to 7%. I think his ratings are rising because he's consistent on his stance against cash register politics in the White House, a stance which connects with millions of people across this country. And Nader's numbers are rising even despite the cheap attacks that have been hurled at him by the liberal gatekeepers of the Democratic Party, who proclaim that women and minorities can't afford to vote for Nader, and that a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush. Well, we're here tonight to set the record straight. And given the sway of these arguments among many people, especially people here at Columbia, I think it's important to unfurl the tainted record of the evil of the two lessers. When was the last time that a Democratic president confronted the problem of racism unequivocally without ceding ground to racism? Like President Clinton did, for example, when he said about affirmative action that we need to mend it, not end it. In contrast, this is what Nader has to say. Quote, after more than 300 years of affirmative action to benefit white males, we clearly need affirmative action for people of color and women to offset historic wrongs as well as present inequalities. So when Jesse Jackson says that blacks can't afford to vote for Nader, we should say to him, tell it to the 2 million black and Latinos in jail today, who've seen their numbers in jail double during Clinton administration. When liberals who have compromised their principles and their best sense, really, tell us that women can't vote for Nader, we need to tell them that Nader stands for the issue that the middle class feminist movement has abandoned a long time ago. That abortion should not only be the privilege of a few who can afford it, but that it should be free and on demand. When they try to discredit Nader, we need to ask them, what will they say to the poor women who can't get an abortion because Clinton and Gore voted to deny that right to women on welfare? We need to ask them, what will they say to the women who can't get an abortion because under the Clinton administration, abortions became unavailable in 86% of American counties? And if this is what happened to women's right to choose under a pro-choice president, President Clinton, imagine what we can expect from Al Gore, who is on the record for voting against abortion 84% of the times in Congress. In my opinion, what this means is that the only thing women can afford to do at this particular historical moment is to build an activist movement to hold back Gore and Bush's basic instincts against women's rights. This is how we won abortion in the first place, and this is how we're going to win it back. In the streets, we're going to win it in the streets, not in the courts. Women won the right to choose under Nixon, one of the most conservative presidencies in American history. We need to do it again. To those left Democratic figures who have used their credentials to bash Nader and to justify the hypocrisy and the betrayals of the Democratic Party, we say that the Democrats make lots of promises, but they don't mean, but that doesn't mean that they will actually keep those promises. And if they are suffering from a particularly acute case of historical amnesia, we need to tell them to take a quick glance at the odious little moralizer Gore chose as his running mate, Joe Lieberman. This is the man who sides with Pat Buchanan on most social issues. The man who is all corporate all the time, who has an impeccable record on the question of tax breaks for the rich. This is what Lieberman had to say to the Wall Street Journal about the funny thing that happened when Gore was en route to his acceptance speech, as you recall, the born-again Christian turned into a born-again liberal. And this is what Lieberman had to say about, you know, the populist rhetoric that Gore spouted. Political rallies tend not to be places for extremely thoughtful argument. You're going to have some rhetorical flourish. There is no rational reason why the markets should be in any way adversely affected by the positions and policies and programs of the Gore-Lieberman ticket. This is what Lieberman told the Wall Street Journal. To the scaremongering that is ultimately muzzling free and open democratic debate in this country, we should say that given the record, a vote for Gore is a vote for the politics of Bush Light. A vote for Nader, on the other hand, is a vote against the rightward descent into political hell that has characterized American politics for far too long. I think that what the haggard politicos in Washington don't see is that today there is a new American citizen that has broken from the straitjacket of the dark ages of the 1980s and early 90s. We are the people who are asking, how low have we allowed our government to sink when both political parties have the confidence to flagrantly disfigure the concept of democracy as they did on Tuesday, when they not only barred a legitimate candidate from participating in the presidential debates, but used the power of the state to prevent him from being a spectator at an event for which he had a ticket? I think that's outrageous. There is a vast population of people out there who are yearning for a completely different political alternative, and that's why Nader's shoestring word-of-mouth campaign has attracted more people to presidential rallies than any other candidate this year. I believe that if we shore up our troops for the elections, on the day after the elections, we can go out and do what Nader believes will beat back the corporate bosses and their friends in Washington, which is to build a movement in which ordinary people begin to determine what happens in their schools, in their unions, and communities throughout this country. Given what is happening in the minds of tens of thousands of people who have already cheered Nader on this point, this is a possibility that we can taste. And with the emerging movements against corporate globalization, the winds of change are on our backs. I'd like to end by saying that every so often, society finds itself at a crossroads. The opportunity to break with the old wretched order presents itself, and its members have to make a choice. The fight for equality, human justice, and human possibility has not been led by half-hearted appeals. It is for this reason, really, that I would vote for Nader and his platform in any state without apologies. These struggles for justice have always depended on the resolve of visionaries, of men and women who are unafraid to stand up and do what is right. And I am glad that so many of us today are counted among those people. Please help me in welcoming a man who for decades has worked tirelessly in the fight for consumer and workers' rights, a man who achieved national stature with a muckraking campaign against GM's criminal record in designing unsafe cars, a campaign which eventually forced the auto industry to introduce mandatory seatbelts and airbags in their cars. Please help me to welcome the Green Party's presidential candidate, Mr. Ralph Nader.